Welcome to the Ditch the Suits podcast, where we get real about the stuff no one in the financial world wants you to know about. Learn how you can better manage your family's wealth while protecting it from financial exploitation and so-called financial advisors. Here's to your financial awakening. Welcome your hosts, Steve Campbell and Travis Moss.
Welcome to Ditch the Suits podcast. Steve Campbell co-hosts with you. We're very excited to have you join our podcast today. This is episode number 47, and we are super close to the big 50 mark. Today, we're going to be continuing our series on money, learning to sift through all the bad news, and living with virtues. But more specifically, we're going to share how you can become bulletproof to all the bad news around you. Bad news sells, or so they say, and headlines can be very misleading. Listen in as we break down some of the headlines from the past year and how these may have led to investor fears and worries. But what if we told you that by rephrasing these headlines, they could have been seen as positives? If you don't believe us, stick with us. It's a fun exercise. We also share some interesting insights on how trading algorithms are impacting the markets. Understanding this information will help you as an investor when you hear of a bad day in the market and what may have really caused it. If you have any questions, thoughts, or feedback, send us an email. You can reach us at ditchthesuits@gmail.com. That's ditchthesuits@gmail.com. We'd also love for you to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode and consider leaving a 5-star rating and review. Your rating and review helps push our podcast to the top of the charts and reach even more people. So with that, enjoy this next episode. Well, welcome back to Ditch the Suit. Steve Campbell here with Travis Moss. This is going to be conversation number two in this series of conversations around bad news in your money and what in the world should you be doing. If you listen to the first episode in the series, we talked about the fact there seems to be bad news everywhere. We told you that if you stay tuned for episode two, we would talk to you about becoming bulletproof. So that's what we want to jump right into. We know there's a lot of crap out there. We know there's bad news. What do you do with it? How do you actually start to insulate yourself to become bulletproof? And we thought it'd be fun to go through this little exercise of what we call reframing headlines, where we're going to go back and forth and read to you headlines as they appear in terms of negative versus how they could also appear in a more positive to take advantage of them. So Travis, let's jump right into it. Hit us with a first headline that we can start to break down.
Investment returned 77% from January 1st, 2017 to October 1st, 2022. That's a 10.5% per year return.
Yeah.
Here we go. I would want that investment, right?
I would take it.
10.5% a year?
Listen to this one. The market has lost $9 trillion of value this year.
You said that in your monster's voice.
Well, it kind of seems kind of monstrous. Kind if of you eerie, read that yeah. at work during the day, you'd be like, oh my God.
$9 trillion is a lot of money.
Yeah, that's all right.
I don't know where the market put it, but market is down 24% year to date. It could get far worse.
I bet it can. Let's look at another one. Prices have come down 24%. Buy now before they go back up.
See what you did there. The stock market is averaging 10.5% per year since 2017. Don't miss out.
So let's think about this. We just went through a couple of these headlines, right? Obviously, we added some voice inflection to make it positive because that's a big part of it. And when you're at your job every day or you're in retirement and you turn on the news and you hear your news anchor say, the market lost $9 trillion, it almost feels like you lost $9 trillion, right? It's really hard to not take yourself out from the fact of what this headline is versus what we talked about in one of those. It's reframing the conversation. The market's down 24% year to date. It could get far worse. Well, no crap. But if you also said it this way, prices have come down 24% by now before they go back up. One sounds like there's a sale, things are on fire, let's go in and get those. So going through these headlines, I think in reframing the fact that from our first conversation, we talked about bad news sells. We like to interject words into headlines that create or facilitate emotion out of us, sensationalism. And it's really hard when you're inundated with all these headlines. But I think it also helps then when you're looking at these headlines in real time. We're going to go through some dates, so bear with us here. Because again, our whole thing is we don't want to just give you information. We want to give you context for how to make sense of it. Let's talk through the fact that all these headlines represent the S&P 500 as of October 1st, 2022. Travis, why don't you walk us through some of these dates and frames and kind of what the market did in response?
Yeah, I think it's wild. I the way that we can play with the same information and create very, very different stories.
Yep.
So I just went and I pulled some historical numbers just because you could frame this in very differently. And January 1st, 2021 to October 1st, 2022. So a year and 10 months, or a year and 9 months, really. The market is down 2%. Two. Not 24, not $9 trillion. 2%, which is a compounded annualized return of negative 1.15% because of how compounding interest and annualization works. But so if I were to say there's going to be a really hard economic time back in 2021, if I said, look, there's going to be a recession, it's going to be really tough, and you're going to average, you're going to lose 2% of your account balance, or you're going to, it's going to be negative 1% a year for 2 years, for a year and a half or 2 years, would you panic?
That's not bad.
Yeah, you'd be like, well, that's not so bad. I remember what 2008 was. That was really bad. You know, that's, this isn't okay. I could handle that.
Yep.
January 1st, 2020, all the way through October 1st, 2022. So add an extra year to that. 16% is what you would have made from January 1st, 2020. That includes COVID.
Yeah.
So you got the COVID market crash in there. You got an election year in there. And you've got this year in there. I mean, like, Japan's being our election year, but you get a lot of volatility creating events, yet you still average. If I said, look, since when COVID happened, if I were to tell you January 1st, 2020, there's going to be COVID, and this is what we're going to do. We're going to lock everybody in their house. We're going to throw away the key for a couple of months. We're going to close all the businesses, ask people not go to work. You know, we're going to basically disrupt everything. And over the next 3 years, you're only going to make 5.5% a year on your investments. You'd be like, hey, that sounds pretty good. I'll take that. Sign me up.
Might have no toilet paper, but I'll take 5.5%.
Yeah. You know, I mean, but that's what happened with the S&P 500. That's where you would be.
That's why.
2019. So one more year, throw one more year in there, 52%.
Over that time.
So if you invested in the S&P 500 back in 2019, January 1st, 2019, you would have made 52%. So if you put $100 in, you'd have $152 today, or as of October 1st. That's 11.9% a year. That includes this year's market crash. So people who are like, oh my gosh, I'm so devastated. I can't believe it. I've lost all my earnings. You're still averaging 11.9% since 2019. If yep. you're, again, if you're in the S&P 500, maybe your investments aren't that, you know, robust, but still, I would challenge you to do the math and figure out where you were in 2019 and where you are now. Compare that to inflation. How far ahead of inflation are you?
Yep.
Right. But they're taking it back. They're taking my earnings away from me. Well, we're going to get into that. 2018. So remember in 2018, we had the Trump tariff thing going on. So there was a pretty big market correction at the end of the year. So January 1st, 2018, all the way until October 1st, 2022, 45.8%. So another bad year mix in there. So now you got two really bad years, not just market events, but years.
Yep.
2018 and this year, 8.26% per year. Not too bad.
Right.
2017, January 1st, 2017. So this includes the bad market in 2018, COVID in 2020, and this year's market, 77%, 77.7%. It's what your total return would have been. That's 10.5% a year. So the market has returned 10.5% a year, and yet we're looking at it saying this thing's broken.
Right.
Last I checked, you could buy an index fund for just about next to nothing and participate with that, and you'd be up 10.5% in that fund from then to now, if you didn't do anything. But we're upset because it's down 24% right now, or $9 trillion. Like, it just doesn't, you know what I mean? Like,
those numbers, when you read them out loud, if you closed your eyes and had most people do an exercise where you close your eyes and say, think about the last couple of years and how do you feel? It just seems like it sucked. There's a lot going on. It's dark.
I wish we could. Yeah.
There's broken relationships. There's broken families. There's loss of jobs. There's foreign countries at war, and they're coming after us, and there's people coming after this and that. It just seems like from our first episode, all you've been is inundated with terrible news that you'd think then the reflection would be in the investments. They'd stay step for step in lockstep with that bad news. But what you just What you just did in this small exercise probably makes a lot of people step back and say, huh, in the last few years, those averages don't seem to make sense, considering the fact that, as we've been talking about, words really do matter. Headlines matter. And I think it's really hard when you're day-to-day and you hear some of these headlines that we went through to understand that those numbers that you just read are actual real life.
Do you think that maybe, and this is a rhetorical question, I don't expect an answer on it, but maybe, you know, they talk about, I see headlines all the time about anxiety being way up and depression being way up and mental illness being way up. Maybe part of the reason that stuff is up is because instead of seeing how great the returns have actually been over the last 5 or 6 years, we're still sitting here saying everything's horrible. Everything's bad. Everything's broken. Nothing here works. Like, it's never going to go back up. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
If you're on this roller coaster where the reality is that things are actually, there's opportunities. It's pretty exciting. You know, unemployment is uber low. There's more jobs than there are people to work on. Wages are up. I mean, there's so much opportunity, but yet everything looks like it's breaking or broken already. Maybe that's what's partly contributing to this, because it's, again, you're always looking over your shoulder going, what's coming to get me? You mentioned words matter. And one of the headlines in there was stock market losses wipe out $9 trillion of America's wealth. That's actually a real headline I got offline. And the reason why I got that one is because it really ticked me off, because the term wealth and the term loss in that, so $9 trillion, the stock market losses wipe out $9 trillion of America's wealth. So $9 trillion is going to get your attention. Lost wealth is going to make you afraid. You take the terms wealth and loss. This frustrates me to no end, because we're abusing what those words actually mean.
Yep.
To try to invoke a reaction. Because most people, nobody knows what $9 trillion is. All we know is that it's a lot and it's gone now. We lost it. And it was wealth, right? It was $9 trillion of gold coins now at the bottom of the ocean. Nobody can ever find it again. Basically, that's the picture we're painting.
Yep.
But it's not true. It's disingenuous. Nothing was literally lost. Absolutely nothing. When you look at your statement, your investment statement, you are looking at an inventory of assets that you own. And each asset has a price for the date and time that that statement was run for. So if that's an October 1st statement, if it's of as of October 1st, it is what you could have sold those assets for at the time that statement was run.
Yep.
And it's an inventory of things you own.
Yep.
You see dollar signs and you say, that's what I'm worth. No, the second that was run, it's outdated. The second that statement was run, those prices have changed. Some have gone up and some have gone down. They're ever moving. All you have is your inventory, just like a store. A store buys inventory. They fill up their warehouse. They say, you know what? I'm going to buy this truckload of stuff. Bring it on up. They have a cost. Let's say that they bought a truckload of stuff, you know, for $1,000. They need to sell the truckload of stuff for more than $1,000 to make money. That's all they care about. Do I get more than $1,000 for this truckload of stuff? That's it. That's all that matters. So they look at their inventory. Their inventory probably doesn't even have the cost associated. They're just looking down their inventory, right? Or if it does, here's the cost. That's your cost basis. What I got into it. It's what I paid for it. If, let's say, you have a seasonal product and it's out of season, what would you do with it? You put it back in the warehouse. You take it off the store floor and you stash it in the warehouse. And you wait till next season, then you bring it back out when the prices are high again. And you rotate your seasonal inventory. You don't just say, like, okay, I guess I'll just take a huge loss. Now, some stores, they'll give you a sale, right?
Yep.
Well, they're probably marking it down to what they paid for it or what they need to buy new stuff with. Based on how much they can make on the new stuff going forward.
Yep.
That's what your statement shows you. People don't see it like that. They see the balance. The first thing on the statement is, I got $1 million. No, you don't. You have a bunch of shares in companies, brick and mortar, cars, vehicles, intellectual properties, contracts with employees. That's what you own on your statement. What you can sell those things to somebody else for at that given time, that's what shows up in that balance. Think about your house. Zillow, watch your house on Zillow. Every single day, just about the value changes.
Yep.
That's not the value. That's the price. When you go and you want to buy a house, what's the bank do? If you finance it, the bank requires an appraisal. Why? Because that's what they'll loan you, only up to that appraisal. You can pay more for the house if you want. The bank won't give you the money. Why? Because the bank's saying it's not worth it. You're overpaying for your inventory. If you want to do that, that's on you. You spend the extra money. We're not going to be on the hook for it because if we take your house, we need to get what we put in for it. If you go and you get an appraisal and appraise it at 300 and you spend 250, the bank says, good job. We like that. We'll give you a lower interest rate. Why? Because they can get more if they got to take your house. They get the extra value. They like you. That's how your statement is. That's literally what's going on in your statement. So when the market dropped, that means prices dropped. You still got your inventory. Your inventory, right, if you appraise it, is still worth the same amount it was already worth. It's just people don't want to buy it right now. They're not coming into your store. They're not showing up to your house and making an offer. So what do you do? Do you sell it to the first guy who walks off the street and says, you know what? You got a $300,000 house. Here's 50 grand. You'd be like, no, get out of here. You'd be insulted. You'd slap him and send him on his way. Somebody comes in and says, oh, you got a $300,000 house. Here's 500 for it. You'd be like, okay, I seriously got to think about that.
Honey, we're moving.
Right. I know a lot of people did that during this whole relocation that's happened over the last couple of years, right?
Yep.
People sold their houses without someplace to go because they got change your life amount of money.
Yep.
Because they were like, I can't believe that fool would pay me for that house. Yep. And so they took it and they figured out where to go later. So nothing was lost, just the prices changed at that exact moment. So the word loss is a lie. You didn't lose anything. The only way you lost something is if you own a company that went bankrupt, then you lost it. Or if you own a company whose value is 100 that you paid 90 for, let's say you got a deal on it, you only paid 90 for it. And then you sold it when it was only, when people would only give you 70 for it. You sold it for, and you lost 20 on it. Now you lost. Yep, you did get a loss. So the one thing you could do, buy something else that's down 30. Right? With the same gap. So you can make your money back. You know, you want to make a horizontal move in the price to value ratio there. That's what you can do to, you know, if you're going to have to be forced to take a loss, think about how a store would do it. I need to sell some inventory to free up cash to buy higher margin inventory. Now let's take the word wealth. My issue with the word wealth in this is that your statement doesn't show you your wealth. Your statement shows you the prices that we just talked about. Nowhere on your statement, though, when you look at your statement, does it show you what the actual appraised value of your stock is worth? Meaning, if you were to go and try to get financing, what would be lent against it? Like if you were pretending each of those stocks was like a house. So if we were to do a valuation on a company, we might say company X on your statement is actually, the value is 100. The current price is 70.
Yep.
So because the price is fluid and is always moving, it's the value that we're concerned about. The value is the wealth number. That's not the number that shows up on the statement. It never shows up on the statement. You have to understand what you're doing to know where that number can be found and how to, you know, compare that to what you're seeing on your statement. So we need to be very, very careful when we're saying that we've lost wealth. That means that the value of the companies on your statement has actually come down, not the price, the value. So if the value of the average company in the United States came down 24%, that is something that we've never seen, devastating economic condition.
Yeah.
There would have to be something existential that was, we would all be in agreement is happening, that is profound and undeniably, you know, extraordinary.
Yep.
All we've seen now is price fluctuation, which is a common phenomenon. So there has been no loss unless you took action and sold your inventory for less than you paid for it.
Yep.
And didn't turn around and buy more inventory with a higher margin, right?
Yep.
Just to tie it all together there. So this type of statement is purely designed to get you to react. And it's completely false and misleading. When $9 trillion, when the stock market drops by the 24% or the $9 trillion, however they calculate that, right? When it drops by that, that's because the money is no longer sitting there waiting. It's not, there's no buyers sitting there saying, I'm going to bid prices up. Where did it go? Back to my earlier analogy. Somebody didn't grab all the gold coins and throw them in the ocean and go, okay, now they're lost.
Right.
They didn't melt them down and turn them into, you know, something else. It just moved. It said, okay, we're not going to be putting it in the stock market right now. Or if it is there, we're going to take it out. And we're going to put it someplace else for the time being. It wasn't loss.
Right. Well, I think you can understand too, you've given us so much information to start this episode, but to people that are dealing with life as it continues to happen, when you hear a statement like that, it is devastating because, right, you just gave us a great way to look at our statements and look at them maybe differently than we have been because we're only looking at a dollar amount on there. And you got to understand that that dollar amount for many people is tied to emotional things. It's tied to their vacations. It's tied to their kids.
Personal identity.
It's tied to personal identity. So it's shocking when you hear a statement like $9 trillion of loss. But you also gave us a lot of statistics to start this that even given the headlines that are out there year by year, you gave us some stats of average returns over that time frame, which has also caused people to go, well, wait a minute. It doesn't seem like you could make that money given everything that I hear day in and day out on Facebook, on the news. So there's a question left to be had, which is there a way to make money given the fact that bad news will only probably continue to happen? So now that you've given people a frame of reference for how to look at their statement and maybe the time that we're in, let's kind of pivot then to understanding making money on bad news and how could even somebody go around doing that?
There's a handful of ways. We're going to kind of zone in on a little on one primary way. You know, this is akin to the same question of why is college so expensive? And I've been on community thought groups and stuff that talk about college being so expensive and we need to be giving out free education or tuition reimbursement or whatever. You know what the fix is for high college costs? Stop paying it. Don't pay that much. Go to a cheaper school. If everybody decides I'm not paying $60,000 a year for a school, I'm going to go to the state school and pay $12,000 a year. Guess what? It'll get cheaper. The $60,000 a year school.
Right.
We're frustrated and we're mad because something costs a lot and it's becoming unaffordable, but yet we're still finding a way to pay for it.
Yep.
So we're kind of being silly at the same time. We're thinking that things are just getting out of control and there's nothing we can do about it. We certainly can do things about it. So the same thing with bad news. Why is bad news so bad? And why is it so prevalent? Because we keep consuming it.
Yeah.
The more you click on it, the more these articles you read. I catch myself in this same downward spiral sometimes. The more these articles you read, the more negative videos you watch, the more you check in on the news to watch the same negative, nasty, vitriol stories over and over and over again. The more their advertisers are saying, hey, we'll pay you more money. Look at all these people showing up consistently.
Yeah.
That's why there's so much bad news. Because we just keep consuming it.
Right.
Why is there so much candy? You go out to the store, there's aisles and aisles of candy. We know candy's bad for us, but why is there so much of it out there? Because we buy it.
Yep.
That's it. You know, we talked about financial experts and CEOs benefiting from bad news. Why do they get away with it? Because we put them on a pedestal and we consume it. Institutional investors. Let's talk about this for a second. Institutional investors are like mutual funds, hedge funds, pension funds, the big guys, the banks, right? The guys who control billions and billions of dollars at a time. They can really benefit from market volatility. Not saying that they're all designed to do this. because there are some that are designed for long-term investing. But for the most part, quite a number of them don't really care about long-term investing. In fact, their strategies are designed to make them money on short-term price fluctuations. They don't care if an investment's a good investment or a bad investment. What they care is that there's a dramatic price fluctuation, and they make money on the price fluctuation. So it's very, very much about short-term, which is why news can really affect the market, because news can create reactions that create short-term fluctuations. And when fluctuations are extreme, let's say one day that, you know, one day there's news about inflation and the market drops by 4%. Well, if I was the first one to sell, I saved my 4% on the way down. And if I'm the first one to buy the following morning when the market goes back up 4%, everybody who's been investing has recognized this whipsaw kind of effect that we have. I saved 4% on the way down and I made 4% on the way up. So I made a quick 4%. Everybody else is even still. Yep. So I can manipulate things or participate with volatility that has nothing to do with whether or not it's a good investment or a bad investment. Over 70%, somewhere between 70 and 90, I think it is, of all the trading, all the investment trading in the stock market. So when you see the stock market moving during the day, 70 to 90% of that is done through what are called algorithms. Algorithms are computer codes.
Yep.
And it's funny, we always talk about artificial intelligence taking over the world. Well, somebody programs the algorithms. You know what I mean? So somebody goes in and tells the computer, this is how you're going to act. These are the things that you're going to do for me. And they can do that with buying and selling investments. And in fact, this is pretty much how all the institutional investors handle their portfolios. Because what's happening is when they go and they sell investments, they sell so much investments that let's say that they're going to sell them all at one time, it would cause market volatility. It would cause the markets to like, why is somebody selling a million shares of that stock, right? They're not selling it because they're dumping it. They're selling it because they're rebalancing their portfolio. So to avoid it looking like some kind of major market correction, they set it up so the algorithm sells chunks of the stock every 15 minutes. Or if the price hits a certain amount to sell it and then not sell it unless the price hits a certain amount to sell it. So they've designed ways to move large amounts of stock through the market without creating kind of a boomer bust mentality. Right. So there's kind of like a purity to in the sense of using computers to help smooth out the stock market. But it's kind of like Star Wars, is there's a good side and a dark side to it. And on the dark side, what's happened is we've also figured out how to use computers to try to take advantage of stuff. So let's say that when you place orders in the stock market, basically the orders can be seen by other people. So they know that, you know, certain amount of stocks are being sold at a certain price. So if you know that a large amount of stocks are being sold at a certain price, and you can get your order in within a millisecond, you maybe could make a couple pennies per share. What doesn't sound like a lot. So the average person sitting at home, I was like, yeah, so I buy 100 shares at a time, I make a buck. Who's really fighting over that? What if you sold a million shares at a time?
Yeah.
Or bought a million shares at a time at 2 pennies, you know, 10 cents, a half a cent, doesn't matter. And you did that a bunch of times. So those algorithms are designed to literally watch the order flow and trigger activity based on what everybody else is doing. It has nothing to do with the investments. It just has to do with everybody else is doing this. It creates a little bit of arbitrage. So we're going to go in and hit a transaction to make a couple of cents on by being a millisecond faster or something like that. The problem with it is that when you start to think of these as like parasites. When you have a regularly healthy system and then you have things jumping in to take advantage of the healthy system doesn't always understand that that's a parasite, right?
Right.
So it's like, oh my gosh, you know, like a bunch of volume just happened. What happened? And so the algorithms are designed to react in a certain way. And so if there's other ones that are designed, once they see volume pick up, to themselves trigger sales. So like you could have an algorithm that says, I own a lot of Apple. If I see X amount of shares of Apple selling within a short amount of time, you know, trigger the sell-off in my portfolio. So what happens is these trigger other kind of dormant algorithms that are just waiting to act if certain things happen. So you got a normal market, then a parasite comes in, triggers this whole counter reaction to it. Well, the regular investor who's sitting there saying, maybe, well, I'll put a thing called a stop loss on my orders, which is basically if the stock price gets too low, sell it for me, protect my principal. That can cause flash crashes that goes through your stop loss and forces you to sell. Well, you're not a computer. You can't act fast enough. So your stock gets sold, driving the market down further. Then their algorithm flips over and goes the other way. The other parasite comes in and says, all right, we hit a certain price, a floor. Let's go the other way now. And they start triggering buys and they go back up the other way. So you'll see in a day, the market went down 3% and back up 3% within like an afternoon. That's all computers living off of each other. But you get hurt in the middle of it because you think that there's actually something happening and there's nothing happening. It's just computers talking to each other saying, well, if you do this, I'm going to do that. That's all that they did. And there's not even anybody watching it. They programmed it and walked away. They're playing golf.
Right.
I mean, that's literally what's happening for the vast majority of trading is somebody's got a playbook and they said, this is what we're going to do in this situation. It doesn't matter if it's a good investment, a bad investment, a long-term investment. Take advantage of the price fluctuation. Think about it like this. There are also ones that I have to make sure I'm not getting out ahead of myself, that literally are looking for bad news. There actually are algorithms out there that are reading news headlines. And then they can read a news story pretty quick and they weight them based on positivity or negativity. And when they hit a certain threshold, that triggers buys or sells. So if I combine consistently bad news with a pre-programmed algorithm that when it gets enough bad news, it starts to sell, regardless of whether or not the bad news is legit or not. We talked about it earlier. And regardless of if it has anything to do with investment principles, that sell algorithm kicks in based on the bad news. It triggers the volume algorithms and the price, you know what I mean? And before you know it, a new story comes out and causes this massive sell-off and nothing actually changed. And it wasn't even a surprise. I mean, we got in September, they raised interest rates and the market dropped like what, 4% that day. Who the heck sitting around at home saying, I guess I'll sell my investments if interest rates go up today? We all knew it was going to go up. They told us it was going to go up.
Right.
That means it's not the average Joe doing that. And it happens so fast. You can't even log into your computer and do it that fast. It's all machines.
Well, I think that's the point that I was thinking about here is I think you're helping people understand that we talk about FOMO all the time and could I have done something? And with all this negative news, people feeling like, could I have avoided this quote unquote loss? Like you talked about, was it really a loss? My accounts are down. Was there something I could have done? Well, if you understand that the rules of the game are that there's mostly algorithms that are causing these fluctuations in the market, and it's not other investors that have necessarily more information than you are and are just faster than you or not working during the day and they're making these trades, which is causing you to go. I mean, it helps you put into context that there are computer codes kicking in that are buying and selling investments throughout the day. And there's not another human person on the other side that just is doing more with their money than you are. It helps you understand, especially bringing it back to the beginning of this conversation, that over the last 5 years, you might have assumed that life is just going to hell in a handbasket all the time, but there's actually been real money that's been made for investors during that time. And so I think what we've been trying to do through the course of these conversations is help you understand that bad news is probably not going to stop. You're probably going to, even when you get off this podcast, go on to your favorite social media, turn on your nightly news, and there's going to be bad news. But it doesn't mean that everything is bad. And there's still ways to get the most from your money in life by being wise about what you own. And I think you put it in a great context. If you know the value of your home, when someone throws out a price, you know if that is something worth considering or not, because you know the value of what you have. So when you're talking about being an investor, if you understand what you're actually invested in and also understanding that there's algorithms that are bringing the prices up and down, then you can actually understand what you're holding on to is worth it to you because it's helping you achieve your goals, financial freedom, financial independence. And it's not just another person that's driving the price up or down. And so I think as we kind of get into this last one, this is a great to kind of lay the groundwork. What we bring about all the time is that money is a tool. There's been so much information out there that I think people have kind of lost a little bit of who they are in all of this. They're kind of questioning their own motives, their own beliefs. And so we want to bring this series home talking about choosing virtue over fear and how to actually live your best life. Not just because you stick the bumper sticker on the back of your car that says live your best life, but how can you start to build a foundation that helps you understand who you are as a person with all this information that we shared. So Travis, anything that you want to share before we kind of bring episode two to an end?
We have to realize that there, just because something that is perceived to be negative is happening,
yep,
doesn't mean that that's something that we always need to be concerned about.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't mean that it's going to get us. And the other thing that we have to realize is that we have to also put it in context and decipher between, is this an event that's happening where it's interesting to be aware of it? Versus, is this an event that's happening that's going to change my life? Yeah. Right. And I think for the most part, most of what's going on out there in the world is stuff that's just happening. Not necessarily stuff that's going to profoundly change your life, let's say.
Yeah.
And I think that we have to be really careful, especially with investing, in understanding that there's a lot going on with bad news and a lot going on in the market that has nothing to do with you. And it doesn't mean your investments are bad. And it doesn't mean that you're not doing something right. It literally is just the mechanics of what's behind the machine. Yep. And, you know, it's Warren Buffett saying, when the tide goes out, you see who's swimming naked. Well, yep. The water level is low and you see how the machine is working right now. Yeah. That's what it is. You literally get a firsthand glance at the reason why it doesn't make any sense what the market is doing right now is because it's not supposed to. It's all the algos messing with each other,
yep.
Right? And all the institutional investors jockeying for position.
Yep.
It has nothing to do with the long-term outlook of investments and how much money you can make off your investments. And if it's good prices or bad prices right now, it just has to do with the big players beating each other up, trying to make a couple of cents off each other every day. Like that's great. Literally like when I think you come to grips with that, you can take a deep breath and go, okay, I don't like it. It's annoying and frustrating. But now that I have context, I don't necessarily need to worry 24/7 about this.
It's a great way to end this episode, and stay tuned. I think we're going to bring a lot of what you just said to life in some more meaningful way. So as always, thanks for being our guest here on Digital Suits, and stay tuned for the last episode.
Well, thanks for listening. We appreciate you taking the time to listen to this entire episode. We hope that this information has inspired you and empowered you to go out and live your best life. But let's be honest, you might have a question or two about some of the things we talked about today. If this is you, Travis and I are here to help in any way that we can. You can reach out to us and follow us on social media on Facebook at SeedPG. You can send us an email, info@seedpg.com. Just let us know in the email. This is in regards to Ditch the Suits, a question or topic you might want us to cover. Or you can visit our website, which is seedpg.com. That's seedpg.com. Head up to that right corner, fill out that contact us button, and just let us know in the comments that this is in regards to Ditch the Suits. If you have a question, a series of questions, or anything we can do to help you on your journey to financial freedom, Travis and I are here to help. So again, it's your money and it's your life. You only get one shot at this thing. Our job is to make sure you get the most out of it. Thanks for being our guest. And until next time, have a great day.
Thanks for listening. Ready to ditch the suits? Remember, it's your money and your life. For more information, visit seedpg.com. That's seedpg.com. If this podcast has impacted you, we ask that you subscribe or follow so you never miss an episode. And be sure to share with a friend.